Hello, and thank you for listening to this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. If you've been here before, welcome back, and I'm sure you know how this goes. I ramble on at the start for far, far too long, then I try to be funny, and then we get on with it. In fact, just like that. And if this is your first time listening, then you're very welcome. I'm sure you'll fit right in and soon feel at home. To every type of listener, both new and old, if there is something you want to tell us, good or bad, then please get in touch. mark.ward@securityforum.org is the address to send any comments, ideas, or requests to get involved. If you have a story to tell, we want to hear it. And funnily enough, that's the theme of this episode. We're going to be exploring better ways to communicate. In particular, we'll look at how storytelling might be a useful approach to use if your message needs to be heard. And it has to be said, information security people often have a lot of messages that need to be heard. But that approach can get past the usual reluctance people have when folks from InfoSec come calling with important things to pass on. And here to explain his success with storytelling is Bruce Baer-Barzagar, currently Director of Information Security Management at German multinational healthcare company Fresenius. Hello, Bruce Baer.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Paul.
Good to have you here. I just wondered, as we're talking about stories, is there a favourite story from your childhood at all that you were particularly fond of? The reason I ask that is because, you know, there's a very particular story being told in the approach you took. But, you know, was it inspired by anything in particular?
Actually, I was a vivid reader, you know, from an early age. So basically, I don't have any favorite story, but actually my best friends were always books.
Me too. Yeah. Okay. Books have been very good to me over the years. So yeah, I can relate to that. Absolutely. Also here is Paul Watts, an ISF principal analyst, distinguished analyst, sorry, who was a CISO at many organizations and who knows a thing or two about communication. Are you feeling communicative today, Paul?
Just kidding. Of course I am. Of course I am. And it's great to be here.
Excellent.
Yeah, very much so. It's good to talk, but it's also good to listen. So I'll be doing a bit of both, I'd like to think, on this one.
Yeah, I think it's I think you're right. I mean, it's a two-way process, isn't it? And I think just to sort of set this up as well, Ruzba, if you can talk about your approach to getting some good messages across, because I think this emerged from a presentation, a couple of chapters. And it was the presentation tells the story of King Infosekios, I think it was, and his three daughters, Piplia, Processia, and Technia, which is just a fabulous way of characterizing that big problem that we have. So yeah, if you could give us a quick overview of that, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thanks for having me. And the story of the three sisters that's what I call them. Started from an ISF grade chapter last year, and I had my presentation ready for the chapter meeting, so I knew what I wanted to present. Then I had a heated discussion with an auditor during one of the audits, and which was really good, really thought-provoking. And I thought that I'm not able to get my message across, you know, somehow is missing, right?
Okay.
And then 5 a.m. in the morning, I got this idea. I woke up with this idea of the three sisters and started just putting the presentation together. And I was not sure that it will be, you know, it will come across well, you know, all of the CISOs, senior experts, listening to the story.
But it did. Yeah, it went across really well. Yeah, I would encourage anyone who's listening to this to go to ISF Live and have a look at the presentation. It's quite a thing. And there's a recording of Ruzba presenting it as well. So by all means, have a look at that. I mean, yeah, because it was, I think you said it was just a better way to portray what's happening and explore why things go wrong and why those messages don't get across.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is basically, you know, we are all children, right? We need to listen to stories. We're all fond of games. We are all, you know, we need to have some fun, right? But in our industry, maybe similar to other industries, the professional way of presenting ideas is very rigid and very rough. And yeah, I don't know. The slides, the presentations look great, glassy, such. But you know, when the story, you know, I'm talking about my own previous presentations, the story is missing, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think there's, having seen quite a lot of InfoSec type presentations, I'm sure you have as well, Paul. Yeah, they can be a bit stiff, and they, you know, it's very much about getting the information across and not entertaining people.
Oh, stiff is right. I mean, look, we've all been in that situation where we've got that email and it's dropped like a thud in your inbox saying you've got to complete your mandatory training on anti-money laundering or information security or GDPR, and a little piece of you dies inside because you're now going to spend the next hour going next, 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 A and B, B, C, A, B, F, next. Yes.
I did G for that one.
I mean, what possible benefit is there gained from going through something that is literally spoon-fed to you and rammed down your throat? And that is a lesson that we still struggle to learn in a lot of camps. And I'm not just talking about cyber now. You know, some of that mandatory training is just dry and awful. If it's not interesting to your audience, if it's not fun, and if it's not encouraging them to learn, it's just going to be something that they do and they've forgotten about as quickly as they've clicked that finish button. Nobody benefits from any of that, yet that is still exactly what we do in a number of different corporate departments across an organization. Nobody likes death by PowerPoint. I certainly don't. Maybe someone does out there, who knows, but I think most people might.
Having done quite a bit of training, the thing you're always looking for is how can I do it faster? You know, that button that says, well, maybe I can just read the text and scroll to the bottom. That was a ruse we used in one of my former employers to get past things. But it was that the problem you found, Brisbane? Just, I guess, you had a lot of messages to get across and they weren't having an effect and weren't changing anything.
Yeah, actually, absolutely. You know, as Paul said, you know, there are 2 points that we were trying to address here. This is training and getting the message across, right? Training has an objective to fulfill, right? We're not training people to train them. We're training people for them to develop a correct, kind of behavior, right? And that's our objective. We want them to behave in a certain way. Right. And that was the same thing, you know, when I wanted to get this message across about people, process, technology, my audience were not the so-called normal users, right? They were actually experts, security experts, right?
Right.
And that, however, we're struggling with the same issue when trying to deliver the message to our own so-called tribe, right?
Yeah.
We are actually, Paul also mentioned, this is so, you know, the presentations and are delivered so stiff and in with too much information that the objective, the real objective is lost. So
yeah,
what are we going to achieve here? That's actually what we need to consider first.
Yeah, what do you want to do? Yeah, I don't know, Paul. I guess as a CISO, you're responsible for lots of things, but your ultimate aim is to try and change the culture of an organization. And that's really big and hard stuff. And I think Roosbear's presentation is also about that as well. But is that a really sticky thing as well? Just, you know, it's leaving aside, you know, get people to do the training, but just ultimately long term, there's a different aim there as well.
Yeah, it can be. Culture is a very interesting topic to unpick, but in the context of security training, it does play a very, very specific part. So in certain organizations, even Rusbe's presentations won't land well because they just don't fit the context and the culture of the organization. So the advice that I would always give people is to really think about your audience and how that audience kind of deconstructs and decomposes, and think about whether the training needs to be manipulated in different ways to suit different audiences. And to Rizbeth's point, you're almost reverse engineering when you try and deliver security training with that cultural nuance in mind. So what are the four key messages that you're trying to articulate to your audience? Okay, so start there. Then think about the different types of culture within your organization, and then the overarching corporate culture. So, you know, if you're talking to people in a corporate office environment, you might be able to contextualize in one way. If you're talking to people who are on a manufacturing plant, you may want to talk to them another way, and so on and so forth. So what you then look to do is manipulate the context and the way that you tell the story to suit the audience. You can then look at that geographically. So the humor in the United Kingdom may not match the humor in Eastern Europe or in the Asia Pac or over in the States. So you have to think about the, you know, making that training personable also has to go back to geography, to culture, to the type of jobs and roles that people are undertaking. So it's actually more complicated than it initially sounds. And this is why a lot of mandatory training really struggles to land, because you're trying to do a bit of a one size fits all, but you're not relating it to the culture. You're not relating it to the audience. So it's literally like hammering a nail into a wall. Gets the job done, but does it do the job effectively? I generally don't know. So the cultural stuff is really important to understand for sure. Yeah.
Rizbeth, you were nodding your head a lot during that. So is that something you've seen as well? Just audiences react in very different ways?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So working in a global organization, I have many examples of that. We have people working in different kind of environments, working in manufacturing sites or in health facilities or in office environment. So we definitely need to tailor our trainings for those people, right? Just giving you an example, to Paul's point, you know, we need to set the exact objectives that we have from the training, right? And we cannot overload the training. One of the great trainings that we've made together, with one of the providers, was actually a video that we have created for healthcare personnel, like doctors, nurses. And that was, you know, we actually tried to first figure out what is important for them, what are the challenges, and how can we, plant this, story within that daily life of those healthcare people, right, professionals, right? And that's actually what we have done. And the story that we've told in that, 3 to 5 minutes video, no, less than that, it was less than 3 minutes video, was the story of in the life of a nurse, right?
Okay.
Answering a phone call, which was a malicious, by a malicious actor calling and pretending to be from the IT department, right? We built the environment, you know, that was quite relatable for the nurse, right? Could understand, okay, this is a busy day in the hospital, in the clinic, and someone calls and pretends to be from IT. So you tend to trust them, right? And everything that goes on. And the feedback that we received was that people relate to that, you know, much better. And it was only 3 minutes, right? The mandatory 30 to 45 minutes boring training that they need to next and test and finish, right?
Yeah. Yeah, very different approach, because I've heard of similar things. There was one organization that's an ISF member, I think, still, who had a lot of mining operations in various parts of the world, and obviously very tricky conditions, you know, all kinds of levels of literacy and different languages and different cultures. And it was really hard to get the training across. So they turned to comics in the end, just illustrations. And because they could be passed around in the tea room, you know, it's because the PCs and computers were really hard to, you know, put in those environments because they're dirty, et cetera, et cetera. And it worked really well. So I think, yeah, it's that two-way street, isn't it, Paul? You were nodding your head there, I guess, similar experiences for you.
Yeah, totally. My advice to people would be, with the cultural understanding in the back of your mind is don't be afraid to try different things. One of the highlights of my career to date was one of the organizations I was working for, we were trying to land some messaging about a cybersecurity transformation program and generally increase awareness of cybersecurity in the organization. And it was an organization that had to do a lot of mandatory training just because of the nature of their work. So we tried something different. And I do a bit of work in education, and I may have mentioned in previous episodes. So I borrowed, literally borrowed 68-year-old children. And in return for some other bits and pieces, so, you know, they got something out of it as well. I brought them to our national center, and I got them to teach our staff about cybersecurity. And it was amazing. The energy levels were really high. People were really engaged, really curious. They brought some of their project work to the office as well. So there's lots of engagement. And an interesting thing happened, and I'd be interested in Rizbe's view of this as well. Some of the feedback I was getting from the workforce was these children look to their elders for support and guidance as they try and find their way in life. You know, the way they become situationally aware of their surroundings. And in an analog world, you know, we've bought that meal ticket. You know, we can help them stay safe, you know, crossing the road carefully, not talking to strangers, all of this stuff. But in a digital world, we lack the skills and the knowledge to help our children be safe. And they actually felt a certain obligation then to learn more about cybersecurity so that they could protect their children. And that was a completely unintentional consequence of what we did. And that really changed the game. The other thing that it did as well was it took the corporate agenda out of the training. So you suddenly made this very relatable and interesting to the audience because you are gifting them with a life skill that is nothing really, well, it is, but to them, it was something that the organization was giving to them to make them better. And because the corporate agenda was out of the way, they didn't feel like they were being preached to. So they contributed, and then the conversation started, and it changed the engagement model literally overnight. You know, I wouldn't say that it was a massive success across the entire organization because it's a big organization. But that really, really put into sharp focus the importance of making it relatable and making it something that they feel they are getting value out of beyond, beyond just downlining corporate messaging. I don't know, Rizbe, whether, you know, any of that, just the idea of trying different things to get the message across, you know, what successes have you had trying different things?
Absolutely. Yeah, Paul, in my previous role in the same organization, I was responsible for cyber culture and training for the group, right? And I was setting up the program and working with different business segments on the same. We had, and still have, many initiatives, programs running. My all-time favorite is called Cyber Rookie, right?
Okay.
Cyber Rookie was meant for children, actually employees' children from the ages from 10 to 15, 9 to 15. And because of COVID, we couldn't have that on site, but we started that as virtual, which is still running. We still have that. I don't know how many sessions we had so far, but what was it all about? It was not about the organization. It was not about our policies. It was about the children, right? What kind of risks are out there? Trying to help them understand in a very, very interactive way. And the children love them. The parents love them. And, you know, we planted, I would say, a seed, you know, in our employees' houses, right? Of that it grows. I would say we gave back to the community as well, but also, you know, in terms of the interests of the organization, the employees felt really this was about them, not about us, not about our policies.
Yeah, I totally agree. You've reminded me of something else there that's worth mentioning too. So I know a lot of organizations, let me take a step back. I think brand is quite important. So when you're doing these small bite-sized chunk pieces of awareness training, if you can bring them back to a core brand that becomes quite relatable, like ISF Analyst Insight Podcast, everybody knows what that is now, Mark, right? So it kind of brings everything back to that common theme, and that you know, people relate to it immediately. They see a particular poster with a font that you've continued to use. They go, oh, Rusbe's doing some more stuff in the cyberspace. That makes it even more relatable, and it kind of brings it back and consolidates it all together. The other thing I would say is that some organizations have really gone to the next level where they've seen that the whole cyber awareness as part of corporate social responsibility, and they're pushing some of that knowledge sharing outside of the organization in the name of CSR. You know, notable mention to, friends and members over at AXA over in France. They've got something called the Cyber Avengers, which is, again, it's something that is outside of the corporate mandate, but it's almost giving something back to society. And I think that's a great way to give back. You know, it's a life skill that everybody benefits from. Barclays Bank, another one, life skills. You know, there are ways to communicate this stuff without it feeling like you're kind of like...
I think it's true. I think a lot of people have that disconnection between safe at work and safe at home, don't they? And it's like they don't see that one relates to the other, and if you get one right, then... And certainly during, again, talking to ISF members quite a lot when lockdown was at its height, they found that, they had to change the way they communicated because the problems that were emerging from people working at home were different. But actually, it helped in some respects because you absolutely could literally bring it home to them. They were the importance of these kinds of things. But I suppose one question I did want to ask was, Rusbe, was just how you measure the success and whether things are changing. I mean, I guess there's some very raw ways to do that. If you get breached less, or if you have less calls to your support, or people click on fewer phishing links. But because culture is a big amorphous strange thing. So how can you ever know that you've changed it, or do you sort of just have to read the runes and think, something has changed here? It's hard to know.
I guess what I'm about to say will raise a lot of controversy. I don't know if in this podcast or later, but I really, there are surveys, there are means to measure culture, but is actually, its culture is so diverse, especially in an organization like ours. We were talking about over 310,000 employees worldwide.
Wow.
In all different countries. And, if you're measuring culture, this is, let's not be illusional. we have some things that we can measure. For example, phishing, right? These continuous phishing simulation campaigns that we're running, and we can measuring, right? And we can see that this is going up, going down based on the difficulty. There are so many different environmental also circumstances affecting the click rate. But that's only a tiny part of the culture, right? This is actually one of another usual rants about security training and awareness programs, that they, people see phishing campaigns as the synonyms of the security culture. No, they're not. This is only a tiny part of that, right? Phishing is important to actually is a very successful threat vector, but it's not the only one. And we have some but really measuring success is can be achieved in different ways. We had other surveys which are not really based on culture only, but in terms of people's engagements, right? How many clicks we have on our, for example, our security intranet sites? How many views we had? Those were good measures for us to see the involvement of our people. But the most tangible ones were, for me, you know, people asking questions. Like, you know, for example, in our organization, we're using a security platform called KnowBefore, right? And there is, you know, my favorite all-time training material ever is called The Inside Man, right? And The Inside Man is a kind of a Netflix series, you know, at that level, right? It's just produced in 7 to 8 minutes of, you know, each episode, right? Our colleagues are in the organization get these Inside Man episodes on a weekly basis, right? We are now in season 5, so which is awesome. So people watching one, then they get automatically one a week after, right? And this is, you know, this is not done in way of a traditional training. But actually, it's they watch this. It's a story of an attacker becoming an employee of an organization, and they follow this, right? And when I get, for example, in the internal forums, questions like, "When does the next season start?" When was the last time that you or any of us ever asked, when do you start the next training?
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Great marker of success, isn't it? Yeah.
I like that. Just to add to that, I mean, your comments on phishing training as well. I love the idea of somebody contacting my team saying, when's the next training? Lay it on me. I mean, that's great. You nailed it when you get there. That's a great story. And there are other cybersecurity training providers out there, of course. The thing with phishing, as you called out, is it's hard to instill a level of control in that data. So the characteristics of the test vary each time. So I'm usually very cautious to put too much on that in terms of this. And you made this point, you know, this in isolation is a relative measure of our security culture. It isn't. But what is if when you think about what it is you're trying to change in an organization's culture, so one of the things that we like to be, you know, really good on is disarming people, making them feel that it's safe to call out unusual or suspicious behavior, and just to feel that they can comfortably say, I think I've done a thing, or I think I'm about to do a thing, and I don't think it's right. I want to check for help. So actually, the metrics that I introduced into board reporting were things like near miss reporting, because actually getting an idea that volume of near miss reporting is going up, that tells me one of two things. Well, one, you manage the board going, oh my goodness, you know, all of these near miss events are going up. What the hell's going on? I'm saying, well, actually, they were always happening. You just didn't know about them. But because we've changed the culture, people feel safe to report them. Now that data is hugely valuable, because now, you know, Rusbear and the teams can focus their awareness training on particular characteristic behaviors that the organization is struggling with. So you're suddenly using that data to provide really, really sharp focus, but you're able to demonstrate that the mentality of the business is changing. And that is how you change the culture. And then when you sprinkle that with people phoning Rusbear's team saying, when's series 2 of your next awareness training coming out? Yeah. People are asking for more training, and they're reporting more, and they feel safe to talk to the security team, and they feel valued. That is change in security culture. It is not next, 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 finish. Yeah, I mean, I love that. I mean, it's great to hear. I love hearing success stories like that, Rizbeh. So right, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, I was in the room in Frankfurt when you presented series one of your I've forgotten their names, just gone out of my head.
People, but it was amazing.
It's storytelling. It was different. It was unique. Everybody in the room was going, "What's this guy on about?" And by the end of it, they're going, "I get it." Good. And that was amazing. And then we went on and did series two, which was, I think it was in Vienna, wasn't it? Did we do series episode two? Was it Vienna?
That was in Brussels.
Yes,
that was in Brussels. Yeah. And I had this experience, actually, first of all, thank you very much for the feedback. This is just, you know, I loved it. You know, I was not sure about it. You know, when I was presenting there, you know, I thought, yeah, that's not going to go well. But then, you know, getting this, and, you know, the best part of the feedback that I received was afterwards, when people were, when talking about people process technology, they were not using these words, but they, okay, this is more people-y, all right? So that was
and you get that success.
The story was actually well understood.
There used to be a website. I don't know if this project's still going. I'll have to look it up, but I'll mention it now. It's called the Analogies Project. I haven't checked in with them for a while, but what they used to do, and it kind of comes back to your earlier point, Mark, on storytelling, is they would take just, you know, a traditional like Aesop's fables or, you know, the tortoise and the rabbit and all these sorts of things. And they would take that basis of the story, but they would tell a security message through that story, through the magic of analogies. One of my colleagues in my team in a former organization managed to submit some content to that. I don't know where it's gone. I don't know whether it's still active, but that telling of a story and making it more interesting, as Rizbeh's done and very successfully done, that's the key to getting our story, our messaging across to our businesses. It's definitely the way to approach it. You're never going to appease everybody. I mean, you're right. No. You know, some people
I think you have to take the risk, because I've got a presentation to do next week, actually, to another German organization, very large. And instead of it just being to that senior team or the InfoSec unit, it's to the whole organization. Yeah. And to be honest, I'm struggling a bit, but actually this conversation has really helped, because it's given me a bit of courage to try those kinds of things, and also to relate it much more to people in their daily lives. And I was kind of tinkering with that as an idea, but yeah, I'll go full guns blazing for that, because got to bring it home, literally got to bring it home.
Mark, actually, that's a good point. We had every October is at Fresenius is called a Cyber Aware Month, right? Mm-hmm. Cyber Aware is actually the brand that we're using to present ourselves. And last October, I had a webinar. It was called "Why Did You Fish Me?" Right, and there, you know, in that actually, me being responsible for sending out these phishing messages, I wanted to connect with people, okay, and tell them why we have done this and everything. And I told this story again, right? And I said, yeah, I talked about myself sitting in a conference, and then receiving an email on my phone, and then clicking, right? Which happened to be, this is a true story, which happened to be a simulated phishing campaign run by one of my colleagues, right? So I shared that with you know, full disclosure, with vulnerability, you know, and showed everyone that, you know, there's no shame in clicking. If you've clicked on this, we do this to learn. We do this, you know, to protect ourselves against those attacks that are coming from the outside, right? And that was also received pretty well, right? Again, another kind of story. There was no analogy. That was a real person, right?
Yeah, I think sometimes InfoSec stories can be a bit abstract, can't they? And it's hard to make it land.
There is something in actually. So I'm not a massive fan of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, that's not a great way to sell our tradecraft, and it's not sustainable anyway. But when you've got the employee's interest, you know, sometimes people will say to you, okay, well, I'm never going to click that link because, you know, bad things were going to happen. But it would be good to have a visualization of what that bad thing might look like. So I've worked with a couple of security researchers and consultants and brought them into the organizations to do live hacks, just demonstrating what actually happens when you click that button. You know, what's happening in the background and what are the consequences of that? And that can be quite useful. I think there's some pre-work that needs to be done first before you do that, because if you do that first and foremost, it's a bit of a shock and awe and it terrifies people. So you've kind of got to warm up to that. But that's a nice little kind of side one to do, is kind of show them, give them a visual of what happens when things go wrong. And it's not to scare them, but it's just to give them context, you know. And so sometimes that can be quite useful. Yeah. But you've got to be careful with FUD. It's something to use very, very sparingly, I would say. And also, don't tell people that you're going to fire them when they fail phishing tests. There are still organizations that use it as a stick.
Yeah.
That's just not the way to win hearts and minds. And if you want to change the culture, you've got to win the hearts and minds, not scare them into submission. It's a terrible way to put security awareness across to a business.
Yeah, indeed.
And, you know, your point, Paul, is even you know, when people click, you know, there are some tendency of rolling out, just sending them out directly to a training, right? In an online training. This is, you know, if you look at this from that user's perspective, this is actually a punishment, right? This is you're not rewarding them with anything, right? It's just you're punishing them in another way. Maybe softer than you know, firing them, which is actually not even, we cannot even talk about something like that here in Germany. But this is actually not really helpful. So there need to be criteria and how, you know, again, focusing on the objective. Why, what do we want to achieve? We don't want to punish people. We don't want to, give them a lesson or whatever. It's just we want them to do the right thing. And every time that an employee clicks on a simulated phishing campaign, they and gets this landing page of "Oops, you've been phished," right? They're being trained. This is you know, the training is already done, right?
Yeah, you don't need to go back and tell them again and again and again. That's true. Yeah, some stuff. Excellent. Well, thank you both. Thanks, Ruzba. Thanks, Paul. I hope as well for that we have told you a good story today to our listeners, and that maybe there was a bit of training in there as well. We've got it across in quite an entertaining manner. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode, and who would want to do that? The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research, tools, and guides.